brought to you by Penguin.
Life in Her Hands, written and read by me, Avril Mansfield. Chapter 1. In the Beginning. My parents met in Blackpool in 1928. My mother, Olive Atkinson, one of four children and the daughter of a fireman, was from Accrington. My father, Ralph Dring, one of six children, was born in Hull but moved to Wales as a child, where he and his father built a house for the family in Gower. The Drings seem to have lived a fairly hand-to-mouth existence. My father sold fish from a horse-drawn cart in the Mumbles area for a while before he travelled to Blackpool from Swansea, seeking work in the 1920s when employment was hard to find. Olive and Ralph met on the pleasure beach, where they had both successfully found employment. He was doing maintenance work and she was a cashier, and their love developed over a series of strolls along the promenade and occasional visits to the cinema. They enjoyed very little privacy, but in spite of that, they soon realised that they wanted to be together for life. They were denied permission to marry by my grandfather Atkinson because the prospective groom was only earning £2.10 per week. Rather daringly, they married on my mother's 21st birthday when permission was no longer required, as Dad's wages had in fact by then been reduced by 5 shillings a week. There would have been even less chance of permission, so it was really their only option. Luckily, the rift soon healed, and although life must have been quite tough at times, they were a happy couple and were to remain so until my father died, aged 72, close to 50 years later. My mother hoped to fall pregnant as soon as she and my father were married, as did one of her close friends and also her sister-in-law, who both had married around the same time, but none had any luck. Then, after 5 years, by a happy coincidence, all three women became pregnant at the same time, so there was joy all round. Of course, there was no NHS in the 1930s. A few weeks after my mother discovered she was expecting, she approached a doctor, choosing her entirely on the grounds that she was female. Dr. Coop, a GP, was responsible for arranging a place for the birth and for checking the pregnancy's progress. This largely consisted of blood pressure checks and physical examinations. In the later stages of the pregnancy, my heart would be heard through a fetal stethoscope. But this was many years before ultrasound was invented, so there was no imaging of any kind. Dr. Coop was a tiny but tough lady, and so she needed to be, as my mother was in labour for about 48 hours and eventually required forceps to deliver me in a nursing home at the substantial weight of 10 pounds and 7 ounces. As a result of this difficult birth, my mother required surgery and was told that she shouldn't have any more children. Her operation was then quite dramatically followed by a life-threatening pulmonary embolus, a blood clot in the veins that moves through the heart into the lungs. The story of this embolus was to become part of our family folklore. My father was summoned to the hospital and told that his wife was at death's door. She was instructed not to move a muscle for fear of further embolism, which would have been fatal. It was a tale of great drama, and it fascinated me as a child. It perhaps explains why my first foray into research as a doctor was on the subject of deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism. In 1937, the year of my birth, there was little or no real understanding of the causes, prevention, or treatment of such thromboses. The circulation of the blood, on the other hand, was well understood. The heart pumps blood into the arteries, and blood returns to the heart through the veins, aided by the contraction of the calf muscles. It was also understood that if a clot formed in the leg veins...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?